So this presentation is reviewing the results of a model looking at the cost impact and cost effectiveness of expanding access to early stage care for chronic hepatitis B. I have no disclosures. So background on chronic hepatitis B, it's an illness, it's a viral infection. It affects almost 2 million people in the US, and because it's often clinically silent for many years, relatively few people are even aware of their hepatitis B status. And it's estimated that only about 5% of people who need treatment for hepatitis B receive appropriate treatment. This is a serious problem because although many people have no ill effects from this long-term infection, about 15 to 40% are expected to develop serious complications, and those include liver cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, and often people require liver transplants. So recently, new treatments have become available, antiviral treatments for hepatitis B that can be administered to people at relatively early stages of the disease. And these have been shown to reduce the viral load, which is a measure of the amount of virus in the blood. And there's some association with reduction in viral load and improvement over the long-term outcome. So in other words, if you can control a patient's viral load over a long term, they're less likely to, we think, develop complications such as liver cancer, cirrhosis, and require liver transplants. And in addition, patients who are available, in the healthcare system receiving treatment are likely to have better outcomes if these serious complications are diagnosed. So we decided that it would be a good time to look at sort of the cost and cost effectiveness of providing this treatment because for many people, it's unavailable. These antiviral drugs cost about $5,000 a year, which is out-of-pocket costs is out of reach of most people. And many people who are infected have little or no health insurance. Now, Medicaid is the program in the US, which you probably know, is available to people at very low income levels, and that provides comprehensive treatment. But the eligibility requirements for Medicaid are very stringent, so it's usually intended for people who are at the federal poverty level below, which is extremely low level of income, or people who have children living in poverty. And so many people with chronic hepatitis B are excluded from access to Medicaid and don't have any insurance. And so the way that works is if you're an individual with chronic hepatitis B, if you have no health insurance, you're basically unlikely to receive any treatment until you present with a serious complication. Either you have to be hospitalized, or if you are so disabled that you qualify as clinically disabled, then you're eligible for Medicaid. This is obviously not an ideal situation because, as I said, there are treatments that are available that can prevent these long-term outcomes in the first place, and meanwhile, people who present to the hospital at a late stage of illness are likely to have worse outcomes, higher level of mortality. So the questions we looked at in this study, first of all, is there a way to evaluate, assuming that providing early stage treatment can prevent long-term health outcomes, what kind of total benefit are we looking at a population level if these are available? And since we're looking at costs, what are the associated costs, and is this kind of intervention cost effective? And finally, sort of outside of the model, but what are some strategies that we could start to investigate about how to implement better availability of this kind of care to people who do not have access right now? So these are our three objectives: develop the model, evaluate cost effectiveness, and examine strategies for expanding care. So the way we set up our model, it's also Markov state transition model. It's looking at two counterfactual situations. So you take a group of people with chronic hepatitis B, and you send them in one direction or the other direction. The first direction is our business as usual scenario. These are people who are assumed to have no health insurance, unlikely to be able to afford any drugs or monitoring out of pocket. And the only way that they receive treatment in the model is if they develop decompensated cirrhosis, hepatocellular carcinoma, or require a liver transplant. The other arm of the same population running through in the other arm of the model, the full coverage scenario, they have full access to treatment at all stages of the disease. They're monitored at all stages, and then if they develop a viral load that is indicated for drug treatment, then they'll receive drug treatment. If they develop a late-stage complication, it'll likely be caught earlier, and they'll have access to full treatment for that as well. So this is kind of a schematic diagram comparing the difference in the model assumptions between these two scenarios. These arrows, which I can show you with the mouse. These arrows are indicating people in the business as usual model are more likely to progress from low viral load states to high viral load states and eventually to the serious complications, which are the most expensive. And this black bar is stages at which they are receiving treatment. People in the full coverage state have comprehensive access to medical care the entire time, and as a result, they are more likely to progress in this direction. So if they start at, you know, day one in a higher viral load state, they're very likely to progress to moderate or low viral load. Whereas in the business as usual scenario, someone who starts at day one in a high viral load is very unlikely to progress in this direction and is much more likely to progress in this direction. So some specifics about the development of the model. We use the Triage Pro program. It was run for 20 years with people transitioning among different states at 1 year intervals. And a little bit about our data assumptions. The initial health states were based on a community screening program to look at people's viral load states at day one, which is an advantage because it's collecting information about you know, sort of a cross section of the chronic hepatitis B population and where they would be starting before being on any treatment. The data about effectiveness of treatment and effectiveness of interventions for the complications and the transition rates between different health states were based on a literature search. And finally, the costs were based a little bit on Medicaid reimbursement, and then we made some composite assumptions of annual costs for late-stage disease states. This is just a picture of part of the model. I'm not going to talk about it that much, but it's just to show these are some, you know, in a certain year, someone could be in one of these disease states, and this is showing the probability of their progressing at the following year. So for instance, someone who's in the HCC state in year one, they have a certain probability of undergoing a liver transplant, and then they have a certain probability, in this case 21%, of going to death or going to the post-liver transplant health state. So in the next year, they'll be down here in post-liver transplant. This is not a picture of the entire model. okay, so results. As you can see from this diagram, this blue bar on top is showing the cumulative cost over time of the full coverage, cumulative cost over time of the BAU. Not surprisingly, the full coverage is more expensive because we're talking about putting most of the people in the sample on comprehensive drug treatment. But what's notable about this is that although full coverage is more expensive, it doesn't become increasingly more expensive over time. The average annual increase in costs in the two models is about equivalent over the 20-year time period. So what does this additional cost buy in terms of health states? This is the initial stratification of the population in the model. These purple health states are people who, you know, this is the health state that you sort of want to be in if you have chronic hepatitis B. There are people who are likely to remain in this low health state. It's a high quality of life health state. And there are people who are unlikely to progress to this dark blue bars, which is serious complications. As you can see in BAU, after 5 years, it's about the same amount as the initial distribution, and then it sort of diminishes over time, people in these best health states. Whereas in the full coverage model, after 5 years, it's already jumped up from about 55% to 80% of people in the best health states. And then it stays about even throughout the life of the model. Meanwhile, this dark blue bars, which I mentioned, are people in the decompensated cirrhosis, hepatocellular carcinoma, or liver transplant. This number of people actually increases over the 20 years in BAU despite the high mortality rate, and it decreases significantly over time in the full coverage model. Mortality rates, this graph is pretty self-explanatory. It's just showing the cumulative deaths over time of people in the model. The full coverage mortality rate is significantly lower, and it gets better and better over time, so that by the end of the model, we're looking at about a 9,000 deaths per 100,000 people saved by full coverage. Cost effectiveness, we modeled by using utility values from a published survey of people evaluating their own quality of life in different health states in hepatitis. And by assigning those utility values, adding it up over the life of the model, and then comparing the quality and the cost, that's how we arrived at cost effectiveness outcomes. As this graph shows, the full coverage is highly cost-effective, even after just 10 years, and becoming increasingly so over time in the model. You know, using even a threshold of $50,000 for a cost-effective intervention, providing people early-stage care in hepatitis B is highly cost-effective, down to about $5,000 per quality, which is sort of an outstanding cost-effectiveness number. So given that, we thought about some strategies for expanding this access. Now, I should say that when we started this project, It was before there was really any discussion about healthcare reform, so it was more targeted towards disease-specific interventions that we were thinking about. So the first three of these are actually disease-specific interventions, none of which is likely to occur. So the first example is a Medicaid. The only ways to expand Medicaid are through a waiver that Medicaid agrees to, which is called an 1115 waiver for a demonstration project. The limitation of this is that Medicaid will only pay for these expansions if you can show from the outset that it's expected to be cost neutral over 5 years, which is obviously an extremely stringent cost barrier, because as I showed in that graph with the cost, there's really no, full coverage remains more expensive than BAU through the life of this model, and to expect something to pay for itself within 5 years for a chronic illness like hepatitis B is really unrealistic, despite the obvious effectiveness of this intervention. Some other interventions we thought about would be that the state could just pay for an expansion by itself, and then maybe take that information to Medicaid and say, look how cost effective this is, would you like to help us pay for it in the future? Or you can get a mandate from Congress, which has been done before. This is the example of the breast and cervical cancer. That came about, sort of an interesting story, because many people were being diagnosed with breast and cervical cancer through a CDC free screening program who did not have access to any insurance and no access to treatment. So there is a specific mandate to expand Medicaid to cover those people to make sure that they could be enrolled and have access. In theory, something like that could occur for hepatitis B, but both that and the state-sponsored expansion, given the current sort of political environment, especially budget environment, those are relatively unlikely. We would support passing a universal access to health insurance as the most straightforward and most likely way to expand access to care for hepatitis B. Because obviously, if the issue is that people don't have health insurance, providing them access to health insurance means they're more likely to be screened, and they're more likely to be able to access appropriate treatments once they've been diagnosed. Now, I should say that even in the case of universal access, every insurance company is still looking at a situation where they have to decide what is an appropriate treatment and what is an appropriate stage of intervention for them to cover. So this kind of model, which looks at a population over time, is actually a useful thing even in a situation where everyone has access to health insurance, because it allows you to compare different interventions and decide what level of cost effectiveness is acceptable in terms of the coverage that you're providing. And in fact, one of our, this isn't in the presentation, but we also modeled out a scenario where people are only enrolled if they already have compensated cirrhosis, and that turns out to be cost saving over about 10 years. And that's the kind of thing that you can program into this model and plug in different things and see what kind of interventions you like the best. So quickly, conclusions, because I'm out of time. As I've shown, providing this early stage treatment is very effective and is likely to be extremely cost effective. We would support universal health coverage as the best way to improve access to this kind of care. And in the future, this kind of model, looking at the epidemiological developments and the cost developments over time, is a good way to assess different strategies for intervening in a chronic disease like hepatitis B, where the outcomes take a long time to manifest themselves. Just quickly, acknowledgments: the study was funded by the CDC and NYU and by Gilead Sciences. And here's a list of people whose help we would like to acknowledge. Thank you. Thank you.